Welcome to Interactive Notebooks, Tapping into Left and Right Brain Thinking. I am a middle school math teacher at Fairfield Country Day School in Fairfield, Connecticut. I teach 6th, 7th, and 8th grade math and algebra. And we're going to talk about interactive notebooks. So what are they? Simply put, interactive notebooks are spiral notebooks that are organized, personalized, and interactive with the students. As one of my 6th graders said, it's a way of keeping track of our notes and homework, and it makes life easier when it comes to a test. For you and for your students, these notebooks will make the classroom so much more productive. What I'm going to do today is walk you through the process, explain the key parts, and then let my students share some of their experiences with you. When they knew I was making a presentation, they had asked if they could make some videos, some of their own little testimonials. So I gave them a video camera, they used their iPhones, and they went off and made some video presentations for you. So one summer, I had these grand ideas to make an interactive ebook. I wanted to put their notes together with links to videos, math vocabulary words, online tutorials, practice worksheets. I attended a webinar online, and I even created my first few lessons, which you can see here. They covered chapter one, and then during my research, I came across a link to interactive notebooks in the Algebra 2 classroom. But this is what I found. And this wasn't really the interactive notebook that I was looking for, but I was really intrigued. I love technology, but the more I read about these notebooks, the more I wanted to learn about them. And if high school students could do this and be this colorful and this organized, I thought my middle schoolers could do the same. So these notebooks are organized. It's not just about organizing papers, but it's about organizing the learning process. Organization is really important, especially with my middle school group. Papers get lost, and that picture there is actually a backpack of one of my former students. For me, I really didn't like it when I would pass back a worksheet or give them papers and they would just slide it into that void that is the middle school backpack. And I thought there had to be a better way. So let's take a look at how these notebooks are put together. The most important page in the spiral is this little introductory chart. This little flipbook has everything students need to know about organizing their spirals. And we spend a full day setting up these notebooks. It's better to spend the time up front to get this stuff organized, have the students learn the expectations, and it's just better than repeating yourself a week or two later. We complete this little chart together and they're quizzed the next day just to make sure they understand what their responsibility is. So there's 6 parts to the chart, and I do guide the students toward coming up with their rules for their spiral. So they have to have a table of contents. And then we have something called the right-hand side of the page, the left-hand side of the page. We have a rule of the page, a rule of the attachment, and then little stamps and stickers. The table of contents is the most important, or the second most important part of the spiral. And here's 2 examples. This page is on the second page of the notebook, and it's where the students record the topics that are covered. Last year's group helped me modify the table of contents. As one of my students said, completing the table of contents is a burden, but it is necessary if you want to find your materials quickly when you're studying. Doing this does add a second or two to the lesson, but much like the lesson's objective, it does help. I've asked students what the topic should be called, and doing so sets the stage for what they're learning. And when they put it into their own words, it really helps them make it stick. So I do grade the table of contents periodically, usually on an assessment day or if we have a no homework weekend. And I don't look at every page. If you notice the one on the left, there are stamps and stickers pretty much on every single page. And that's what I used to do, but it takes a really long time. So on the right-hand side is I have the students pick numbers, just random numbers, say from like 1 to 45, and we choose 10 numbers and I just look at those 10 pages. And because they don't know what pages I'm looking at and they generate the page numbers, it's just random and it keeps them honest. The right-hand side of the page is where students write or take notes or tape down a worksheet that I might have created for them. This is the information that I give them. The left-hand side is where they make connections to that right side through homework, questions, observations, even drawings. Homework can be in the form of teacher-made materials, puzzles, or even questions from the textbook. When I was doing my research, I came across Renata and Jeffrey Kane's Brain Mind Principles and Action books. And they say this type of organization helps the brain make connections between what's experienced and what that experience means to the learner. It helps the students process the information and make meaningful connections. So here's Alex's work. And after he was learning more about linear functions during class, his homework was just to take some colored construction paper and look at the key components between discrete and continuous graphs and just describe them. So another reason why I like this left-hand, right-hand page is so many times before I did the spirals, the students would come in and they would say, well, I didn't understand the homework, so I couldn't do it. And I'd ask them, did you go back in the book? Did you look at the notes that we took? And they either can't find their notes or they just wouldn't go back to the textbook. What I like with this is the notes are on the right-hand side, the work's on the left. All they have to do is glance right to that right-hand side and everything is right there. The kids will also ask as they're doing an assignment, they'll say, can I use my notes? I'm like, yes, absolutely. That's why they're there. Go ahead and use those notes on that right-hand side. Depending on the lesson, I might give them a shell outline, which is what you see here for compound inequalities. And we'll fill it in as we go. And you can see that Julian filled in the graphs for the compound inequalities. He highlighted some keywords for the word problem that's down below. And then his homework is right there on the left-hand side. Students will also make observations between the classwork and real life. After our first lesson on patterns in sixth grade, we use the left-hand side to look for patterns in their house numbers in the neighborhood. So a couple of the students did a little outline of their house numbers, and they just tried to look for a pattern to see if they went up by twos, up by threes. Here they're going up by 30s, but then there's a 46 and then 58. There's just no, it's very haphazard. And what was really exciting was they came back the next day. They said, I found a pattern. I was like, well, what was the pattern that you found? Did you know that all the even numbered houses are on one side and all the odd numbered houses are on the other side? They were really excited about that pattern. The picture on the left-hand side is an actual house on a street that a student took. And he was really curious about why there was 140 and a half. And we're actually going to try and get a hold of someone down at the town council to figure out why there's 140 and a half. There's a 138, a 140, a 142, and then there's a 140 and a half. And it looks like it's a full-size plot. I see there's a question on the notes on the right-hand side and the homework on the left-hand side. Yeah, it does seem backward, but if you think about when you're reading a textbook or not, or even a novel, it's the first page that you're looking at is on that right-hand side. And it also is counterintuitive to what you would think, like you said, going back and forth, starting on the left and going to the right. And this just really makes you focus with the material on that right-hand side. The fourth rule for the spiral is the rule of the page, which means that all the students are on the same page. Literally, they're on the same page. In a sense, we are creating our own textbooks, and so the pages need to be consistent. This is a section from our eighth grade algebra notes, and Willie's page 39 is on the left and Tyler's is on the right. Both cover ways to organize and display the data, but Willie added color. Tyler's is straightforward, all the information's there. Willie just likes the color to make the images stand out, but Tyler did a great job with his notes as well. So one of the things you might be thinking is, can I really be this organized? Is it possible to get them to do all their work on one side, put their notes in every day, have all their homework on that left-hand side? I've used these spirals for 5 years, and I've modified it to meet the needs of my students. They've given me tons of feedback. After surveying about 150 students over the past few years, former and current, I have received a lot of suggestions and a lot of constructive criticism. My colleague was set to use the spirals 1 year, so the entire sixth grade would be literally on the same page. I gave him my spiral, I downloaded some of the notes, I ordered notebooks, and I thought that I had explained it well, but it wasn't enough. He ditched it after a month. And his input to me was that I needed to spend more time with him walking through how to set them up. He told me it's not something that you can decide to do during two preschool meetings, and we had to look at it earlier. So that's what we did the next year. He was willing to give it another go because he did see the benefits. He just needed more time to prepare for it. So I field tested at least 4 different spiral notebooks. We used 8x10.5 spirals with graph paper, and we used them with line paper, and we used larger graph paper spirals. The marble composition books that we had were too small, and the pages easily fell out of the ones that we did have. Ultimately, the class voted for the line spirals that one of the elementary science teachers used, and that's pictured there on the right-hand side. And they decided to forego the graph paper because the spiral covers are heavier and they don't fall off as much. The smaller composition, not the composition, the graph paper ones that I got from Staples, they loved the graph paper, but they ended up having the covers rip off. They didn't have an inside pocket, and we ended up using rubber bands and ribbons to tie them together. Usually we'll go through 2 of these for the entire year. If students can't get the same notebooks, just keep them on the same page. And if they lose them, we're always able to get them an extra one. So some of the questions that have come up from some of my colleagues who are interested in the spirals are, what happens if they run out of space on the page? So because we are keeping everything on the same page, we just take another sheet of paper and we tape it on top. So if Willie needed to do more work on his homework, he would just take another sheet of paper and tape it on top of page 39 that he had already done his notes on. If they're on the wrong page, this can happen in the beginning of the year when they're just getting used to organizing the spirals. So this is where I have to decide whether I want to teach math or teach responsibility. And what I end up doing sometime is photocopying their papers and getting them on the right page, or I've taken their page out and had them copy it over just so we can stay on the same page. I have done a notebook per marking period. It keeps it nice and organized. And this year, we have a little bit of a budget crunch. And because we've had so much extra paper at the back of the spiral, I think we're going to end up using 2 spirals for 3 terms. If they forget their spiral, their interactive notebook, we just have extra paper and they can just tape it right on the pages for them. And in the 5 years I've done this, I've only had one student outright lose his. And I gave him my spiral, because I keep my spiral. I do the same thing they're doing. I have a document camera in my class, and so I am just taking the notes with them and showing how that how they should set up their homework so they're organized. And in Daniel's case here, he left his in the courtyard over the weekend and it rained a lot. And it was there when we came back on Monday, we dried it and it was still good to use for the rest of the term. At the start of the year, we will have students who will start off on that wrong page, like I had mentioned. And I do try to monitor their spirals during the first week just to see if they're on the right page and make sure that everything is organized. Mostly, sometimes I'll assign a homework assignment for them where I just want them to number the first 20 pages. That way their pages are numbered and they just stay there. Okay, here's the first video. So this is Zach talking about his perspective on the organizational component to the notebooks.
All right, in sixth grade, I used the spiral on the spiral. Then now I'm in eighth grade again. I'm with Miss Barnaby again, and I have my spiral, and I still really love the spiral. My spiral helps me keep track of my homework, tests, quizzes, everything I have. So overall, I really love the spiral experience.
The test, they do have a binder for their tests, and in front of the spiral, there is a pocket in this one, so they can put some of the tests in the pocket. Now I'm trying to figure out how to get back to the screen. Thank you. Do you attach study guides in the notebooks? It depends on the study guide. If they create their own study guide, sometimes we'll use pages in the spiral. We'll just have like two pages, a left and a right-hand side page, and we'll just do a study guide right on there. And lately I've been doing a different type of study guide. I attended a really cool conference in Chicago, and the study guides are more organized and created by the students to get them more in charge of their own learning. And so that's something different that I've been doing this year. So this is the personalization aspect of the spirals. They personalize their spirals in many ways. It can be as simple as writing their name on it, or they'll draw pictures. Some will add stickers to it. You can see the difference. The spiral on the right-hand side is the smaller staple spiral with the graph paper, and the one on the right-hand side is, or the left-hand, the right-hand's the smaller one. And they like being creative. They like decorating them and adding their own personality to it. They'll use color to highlight their notes, to call attention to important facts, or draw silly pictures to help them remember rules. So on the left-hand side, this was using order of operations with substitution. And when we were talking about organizing your work to make it look like an inverted pyramid, one of the boys in class said, "Oh, that looks like those muscle men down on the beach with the broad shoulders and the narrow waist." And everybody had a, you know, good laugh over that. And then they just started drawing muscle men throughout. You can see the head and the little muscles and the arms. That was just one way to help them stay focused, and it just kind of stuck. And On the right-hand side is the color coding for similar figures and proportions. The color coding just helps them stay focused. They can look at the corresponding sides, and it is kind of a lot like sketch notes. That seems to be the new thing that's coming up, and it's just something that's making it them. They love the color. So Owen color coded the sides of his triangles, and whatever they feel helps them to see the math is what we are encouraging them to do. This system also allows them to differentiate on their own. And with my guidance, they do what they need to help them learn. So is this doodling? There's lots of color and random pictures of flowers and who knows what else is down with that 7/10, but it's keeping their brain, you know, working, and they're focused. They're writing notes to themselves, and the color is just something that's just really helping them. My class periods are only 45 minutes long. We have had students come in this year. We had two students come in middle of the year. We had a boy whose family was displaced from St. Croix. And when I knew he was coming, he was coming on a Monday. And so I stayed after school on Friday and I photocopied some of my notes and some of a classmate's notes because I wanted it to be more kid friendly. And I just created a new notebook for him. And so it is possible. And that's why I keep the notebook with them, you know, I do what they do, because it's just, except for someone lose it or if somebody comes in mid-year, I have something I can hand to them. So color tells the brain to pay attention. Color can connect neural pathways, and it's been shown to alter the level of certain brainwave activities. Creating visual images is not easy, and it equates to a higher order thinking skill. Asking students to draw with their learning activates different modes of thinking. It's a great starting point for visualizing word problems, and it's a stepping stone for the symbolic language of mathematics. Eric Jensen's work with brain-based learning has also shown that 90% of all information comes into our brains as visual, and 80% of all people learn visually. And I wonder if that's even higher. I also teach study skills in addition to math, and I teach it to the entire sixth grade. And every year I start my class with an activity of, you know, predict your learning style. Do you think you're kinesthetic, auditory, visual? We draw Venn diagrams, we put sticky notes, and they take two or three questionnaires to see if their prediction is true. Stereotypically, the boys usually come out more kinesthetic. But in the past 10 years, I've seen those numbers dwindle and more boys have become visual learners. And I wonder if it's just the technology, and it makes me wish I had kept some data for the past 22 years. Sometimes I'll have a digital copy of my notebook. I do some flip videos, and through the videos, I will take pictures of the notes and give those to the kids. Our science teacher, our seventh grade science teacher, has just started using the spiral notebooks after she teaches a lot of the same students I teach, and she sees them in her classroom and she said, I think I want to try it. And she does do a digital copy. She takes pictures of her pages and she uploads them to her website on one of her topics pages. So if anybody's absent, they can go right to her website and do that. And I will do the same thing. If a student's absent, I'll take a picture of my notes and either email it to them, or I'll just put it on the board with their name on it and they can come pick it up. So here is Evan. He is probably one of the most colorful students I've ever had. And he's gonna tell you what he likes about the spirals.
I like the spirals, how it always keeps them organized, and I like the coloring because like it shows you where the main points are and the like where to look and what's not important. And I like also how you can customize the front cover. It's always fun and helpful. You can always do what you want because I like drawing.
I have a document camera. I ought to do the same thing, post the pictures of the notes to my website. That's a good idea. Thank you, Jacqueline. So, does this look familiar? I've seen eighth graders do this. They've taken a quick shot of a problem that we've worked on before school or in study hall, but this is not interactive. The interactive component to the spirals ties into the personalization piece. We interact with our notebooks in many ways. Sometimes handouts need to be trimmed to fit on the page, so students will use scissors to cut them down, and then their fine motor skills get some work. Worksheets or puzzles have to be taped or glued in, so they're up getting their tables bins, making sure the pages are all inside the notebook. This is where the rule of the attachment comes in. Everything is taped or glued in the spirals, and there are no loose pages. So students interact with their spirals by creating flipbooks to help them remember different concepts. And they can be as creative as they want. This is Nate's booklet on percent decimal fraction conversions, and Alex's foldable on the characteristics of horizontal and vertical lines. Riley created a word web for rate of change. And Will made a flipbook on the three ways to find slope. And then Ben made note cards to help him remember the ways to find greatest common factor and least common multiple. Last video. So Will is a huge fan of the foldables and the flipbooks.
Okay. Take one! Alright, I really like these spirals flipbooks because you can have these colorful pages and underneath you can have the definition of what's on top, and it can really help you, like it helped me with equations, so you can have what each letter means, and then eventually that'll help you later on with equations.
Okay, this slide is called rudderless, but I can't take credit for the word. It came from a parent of twins, one of whom was in my class. Ben and Ollie had two different math teachers, and their parents could see a big difference in the organization and their studies. Ben, she said, had some place to go to find help on his homework, and she said she often found the two huddled together at the table with Ollie using Ben's notes and foldables. What she loved about the spiral system was that she could see what Ben was doing in class and help him if needed. I've had former students tell me they've created their own version of the spiral system in their current classes because many of them need that extra structure. The spirals aren't just for math class. They can also be used in science and history. So I'd mentioned our science teacher is starting to use these. All of the math teachers at our school use them for 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, and our 5th grade Spanish teacher also uses them. They're also a really good reference for parent conferences. Students are proud of their work, and they enjoy showing off what they've created. So if you wanted to get started, you just need spiral notebooks, tape or glue, scissors, and some storage bins. We use these bins just to keep some extra supplies. There's pencils, rulers, multiplication chart, and the students will come in if they know that we're gonna be using them, they just go and they take them from the back and they put them on their tables, and then they just throw everything back in there. Not everything always makes it back in. We do have to do a little bit of cleaning. And The reason that I do like the bigger notebooks is there's less cutting down that I have to do or that they have to do, because the 8.5 by 11 pages fit into the larger spirals as opposed to the smaller ones or the composition books. And the timing, I've noticed some people have talked about, like, if we get everything done, and if I know that today we did do some cutting, so I will pre-cut some of their materials and have them ready for them when they walk in. And the construction paper is usually cut down. We're doing a foldable tomorrow on inequalities for words for greater than, less than, greater than, equal to, less than, equal to. So that's already prepared for them. And it's just cuts down on some time if I have them do some of the folding at home as well. And then we come into class and we will put everything together. If you have any questions, please feel free to email me. This went a little quicker than I had thought, which is fantastic. So we have plenty of time for questions if anyone has any questions. We don't do, Carolyn had a comment about the timing. We don't cut and paste every day. It's usually we're writing everything in the spirals. And so we might do foldables maybe once a week. And most of the notes are handwritten in their spirals. So we don't cut and paste every day, because I agree, it would take forever. Sheila, any questions I might have missed?
No, I was just looking back, and I think you got most of them along the way. Let's see. I guess because you addressed the attendance issue one, but is there like a time frame for how long? Like, so at the beginning of the year, you're obviously teaching how to like create the book, like. Is there a time frame before, like, okay, the kids really, like, how long do you think it takes till the kids are like, okay, they got it, and now you can really just work on, like, all right, put it on this page and let's go?
I'd say by the end of the first week.
Okay.
Because we will spend the entire first day talking about the spirals, why we're organizing it. We'll do the introductory chart. They'll take a little quiz the next day, and by the end of the first week, they're good to go. It's not to say that we haven't had students who have miscounted a page, two pages might get stuck together. So their numbering could be off. And usually I'll tell them to come see me in study hall if I can't take care of it right there, but it's usually a pretty easy fix.
And then there's a lot of people asking about supplies. Do you have kids bring them in? Do you provide them?
We're fortunate at our school to have the supplies. And so we have the scissors, the tape, the glue. I have gone back and forth with whether to use the glue sticks, tape. Another teacher uses just like the Elmer's glue, but puts them into a smaller glue bottle. And she says psychologically, when they see a smaller glue bottle, they don't actually dump a lot of glue on there. And it's just been, I'm trying to do that. I have some of the glue bottles, but right now the tape is the quickest, but tape does go quickly. And some of the kids have brought in their decorative tape from their moms and their younger sisters. I don't know if it's washi tape or if that's, They use different tape. They use the decorative duct tape with sports teams on it. They like to do that as well. So they will bring in their own supplies, but mostly we do provide them.
And then what about students who are slow writers? So it takes them a while to fill out, do their page.
So I have a student right now who has, he has a really hard time with a pencil grip. And I have created graph paper for him. I did a graph paper template. So it's big. And we took his spiral, and with his parents are also helping. They have the graph paper at home, and we're just putting that in his spiral, and we're taping it on the side so he can flip it like a book and it's easier for him to write in. And some of the times if he has to copy, if we're copying problems off the board, I will do it for him. And that way he just has to focus so much on the work, because he just has some fine motor skills that need to be strengthened. And so we're just putting the big graph paper in there. It's like, I don't know if it's like half an inch by half an inch. It's pretty big.
And then do you have a section for vocabulary?
I do not have a section for vocabulary. I did last year. It was in the back. And I am having a big debate with myself on how to better introduce and better reinforce vocab. So I've been using the Frayer models and just having them keep them on an index card with a hole punch with a ring. And they're putting that in their math binder where they keep their notes. And we're also looking at doing some collaborative work with our tech department and using Google Slides and trying to create a program where we have a math vocabulary with interactive with videos and Google quizzes. So that's one of the things we're trying to develop.
All right. And then I'm not sure. So Diane, if you want to maybe say more in the chat, but she said, can you talk a little bit more about the left-hand side of the notebook?
So the left-hand side would be where they would, that is their output. The input is what I give them, and the output is what they're going to give me. So it could be in the form of questions from homework. It could be Billy's a new student to the school. We just got done doing scientific notation. Explain to him how to put a number in scientific notation. So I might have him do some writing. It could be a drawing. It could be the patterns, like going out and doing the neighborhood and drawing the houses and the numbers and looking for things. We're trying to do more of what are you noticing? So it's questions they might have. We'll give them stickies and we'll have them color code the stickies with red, yellow, green. Where did my learning stop would be for red. I'm okay with this concept, but I need a little bit of practice could be yellow. And then green would be today I learned, and they would put that on that left-hand side as well. And then I can do a quick walk around and see where the students are by the information on the colored sticky, like which sticky it would be. Did that answer enough? Did she?
Yes, she okay. Says that answered her question.
Okay.
And then I'll...
Yeah, like Nia said, could be, you know, reflections, quick write summaries, just a little bit of information. Sarah, thanks for that shameless promoting. I'd love it. I'm going to go check that out. Do you guide the color? I don't guide the colors. They pick their own colors. We have colored pencils all over, and they will, they just go and grab them. If I'm using colored pencils, they want to use colored pencils. And when I say today we're going to color or draw, they love it. Do you know any stores are willing to donate spirals or tape or glue? I know that when I was doing some projects, I went to Home Depot. I know they won't have spirals, but Home Depot has always been willing to donate to schools. And I would think that you could probably get material donated from Staples. We usually send them a nice thank you note, a picture of the class, and they love it.
I also, just as a side, when I need notebooks at the beginning of the year when they're on super sale, mm-hmm. I like find people I know who are willing to donate them to my class and then sell them to my students for like 25 cents and they're 17 cents. So they like end up covering the same cost. So mm-hmm. That way then it ends up not being extra cost to me. Just is another way to get materials.
And I do have students do reflections or do some quick writing. I'll do temperature checks where I just want to take a pause. Sometimes I do that on paper. Sometimes I'll do that through a program, whether I'm using Socrative or I think other people might use Nearpod, just to get a quick tabulation. Getting Diane talked about having students take charge of their learning. One of the workshops that I went to in Chicago, they suggested, and I started doing this, is I created a Word document or a Google Doc, and it listed the learning targets that I wanted them to accomplish. So it could be something as simple as, I can turn a mixed number into a proper fraction. I can change a decimal to a fraction. I can find equivalent fractions. And I have a table, and on the right-hand side, it says M-A-T-H, and M is mastery, A is almost there, T is time for practice, H is help. And periodically, maybe every other day or every third day, I will do a spiral homework assignment where they have to answer questions based on previous assignments, and then they have their learning targets. And as we're going through, I want them to self-assess and take charge of their learning by circling what they need help with or circling the M for mastery. And then I've put links to resources to their online textbook. And my sixth graders have felt that it's really helped them prepare for assessments because they know what they have to be, they know what they're in charge of, they know what they have to learn. And they like it when they can come and say, I need an extra worksheet on this, or I need a little puzzle. And so far I've done this for 2 months, month and a half. So far, so good. They're slowly starting to take charge of their learning. I don't think anyone's really taught them how to do it. And I think they're happy. They really see the benefits. How do you grade? So I grade their spirals are just out of 10 points, and it's just a table of contents. I don't grade their notebooks for their content. I do walk around and look at them. If I do a flip video and they have to take notes, I will see if they've taken the notes. And we just send home an update and saying that whether their homework is completed. But I don't grade their homework because I don't know who's doing it. And I want to make sure that they're taking a risk and making a mistake so I can actually help them, as opposed to a tutor or their mom or dad doing that. So the homework, the spirals are just a little 10-point assessment. I don't do a cover page for each unit, though that would be really, really nice. I kind of like that idea. More coloring. I don't know if you could tell, I teach at an all-boys school, and they love the downtime. They love the coloring. We turn the lights off. We put on some music, and they really enjoy a lot of the doodle notes and the sketch notes. I think they find it very relaxing. Donors Choose is really good. Any other questions?
There's one just as a reminder, what age group do you teach again?
I teach 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. I like Dina's suggestion. No, Nia, we do not follow Common Core standards, though next year we are starting to pull them in more. This is the pro and con of being at an independent school. We have Singapore math in focus for our kindergarten through 5th grade. And 6th grade is more of a pre-algebra, and 7th and 8th is algebra, and 9th is geometry. But we're starting to pull in the Common Core. There's a combination of when we tape or glue down, because sometimes we'll have a flip page where you'll they'll be writing on the bottom on the actual paper, and then we'll tape on top. So sometimes I will have them fold just like an inch down and just glue the top. And that's that way they don't have to tape everything down or glue everything down. So it is kind of a combination. Though they love to use the purple glue stick and just smear the glue on all the pages and just slap it down on the worksheet. I like Dina's suggestion about folding the paper strips as a paintbrush.
I think, does anyone have any other questions? So one question is, what advice would you give someone in regards to planning foldables and or the left side activities?
I'd say the left hand side is to make it meaningful where it connects with the right hand side, and the foldables, my guys love to do the foldables, but I think it has to be something that's going to be used and that's going to add to the instruction. I'm starting the quadratic formula and the discriminant tomorrow. And so I was Googling to see if there was any type of discovery or activity that I could do. And I didn't find anything that I absolutely loved. So I'm not going to force it. And I think I'm going to stick with what I've been doing. But there's so much online for foldables, and there's tons of like sentence starters for left side activities that you also could use. And it's just, Don't go crazy trying to find things to fit. Eventually you'll start to discover things as you go along, but it can be overwhelming to start this. And my suggestion is just start small. And I just cannot believe how much more organized everything is for my students and for me, where it's all in one place. And they like it. They like the fact that this is theirs, and they've just created a little textbook for themselves.
Is there a specific place that you go to find foldables, or a program you use to make them?
No, I've Googled foldables. The one that was the percent decimal fraction conversion, that one was, I found that online and I just recreated it using a Word document. And it was just cutting up the outside part and then cutting up the matching. It was a matching game, basically. And it was just having them put it together. So they did. So they were learning as they were putting it together. Instead of my saying, here's how you change the percent to a fraction, they had to find it. And they were working in small groups as I circulated. And then they were talking about it. And so I just created it by something I saw online. Oh, thanks, Nia, for that blog spot. You're welcome, Sarah. I hope it works. Yeah, Dinah Zike, she's another one. She does a lot of foldables. She is the foldable lady. I have a template for the introductory chart. If anybody wants that, I should have put it on the handouts, but I can, if you email me, I'll send that out to you. That was from a blog that I had gotten a lot of information from, and I can send that out to you. Does anybody have any suggestions for something I could do differently? I can try making foldables on PowerPoint, Ryan. A data page. What do you mean by a data page? Oh, okay. That would be great. They're responsible for their own scores, and they can see the progress with the pre and post. I like that. Thank you. I'm really happy that so many teachers at our school are trying it. The parents love it. The I can statements are nice. We did add a folder in the back of our graph paper spirals. And the bigger ones that we have now have a pocket folder in the front. I like that evidence of learning. I like the idea of the 5 to 10 question concept checks, because long tests are just so long. And I think the shorter, more frequent assessments are really nice. I think a graph paper journal would work, depending on the size. Oh, I like that anticipatory guide. The graph paper, depending on how dark that blue is, it can be hard to read. I found a really nice spiral notebook at Staples. It has a plastic cover, but it's probably 3 times as expensive as the one we're using now. Yeah, the 5 subject notebooks would last a little bit longer. Some of the spirals, we did have those at one time. They came like not unraveled, but the bottom part of it was, they weren't, the spiral that's on the notebook that we're using now is really thick. So it doesn't tend to come undone. How many pages? We use probably 150 pages would be my guess. Ooh, the envelopes has pockets. The one we have now has 100 sheets in it, and we're on page 88 for my algebra classes. And we're almost done the second term. So we will get another spiral for the third term. They are getting thicker as the term goes on. When they get their new one, they all comment about how thin it is. Do you have quarters or trimesters, Ryan? Any suggestions to get students to write smaller? I have some students who write so small that they can't even read their own handwriting. And then I have some who write really, really large. And the graph paper, keeping a number in a box can help if you get the bigger boxes and where they can still read it. That would be a suggestion, Dina, is to try using the graph paper. There are some teachers who don't allow their notebooks to go home on Nia, but I don't know how they get their homework done. Okay, 2 1 semester classes. So Sarah, depending on the assignment, yes, we would glue it in first and then complete it within the homework. We would do that. Tonight's homework assignment for my inequalities is they had to match some inequality graphs with the word phrases. And I gave them a sheet of purple paper and they had their graphs. They were gluing them on there, and then that's just going to get taped into their spiral when they come in tomorrow. I don't print the material out as half sheets because the spirals are bigger. The spirals are 9 1/4 by 11 1/4. So sometimes we will just trim down just a little bit. They've also gotten really good with using a ruler and ripping the pages out, or not ripping the pages, but trimming down the ends of their paper by using a ruler. The letter envelope on the back cover is a good idea. Could even get like those slightly bigger manila envelopes. the QR code linking a video is a nice idea, Nia. So many good suggestions tonight. Thank you so much.
All right, so it is 10 o'clock, so I'm going to go ahead. Just so everyone here knows, this link to the that you use to get in.